Good morning. Today's scripture reading will be from Proverbs chapter 1, verses 10 through 19. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, "Come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole, like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us. We will all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. For their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird. But these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors."
Good morning again. Wanted to tell you about some friends of ours that are visiting today, Chuck and Jane Garrett from Franklin, Tennessee. We used to serve with them at a church in Memphis when we lived there, and I just want to tell you a little something about Jane that you wouldn't know. We had a breakfast with Santa one year to raise funds for Agape, Child and Family Services, and we had a Christmas tree in the church with breakfast for Santa, and I don't know if it was out of frugality or just convenience that Jane said, "Look, if you're going to throw that tree away after this is over, I want it." And so lights, ornaments, everything, we took that tree out, put it in a pickup truck, and drove it through town, through Bartlett, to her house, put it in her living room, and she had a tree for Christmas. So those were some good days. Some other good days. When I was in the seventh grade, I was one of the crossing guards for our elementary school. And so the best thing about that was I got out of class 15 minutes early before school ended, and I got to go outside and put on this little vest and hold a long bamboo stick with a flag on the end that said stop. You know, so we could stop the cars at the intersection so kids could cross the street and go home for school. We also had to form this path down this alley next to the school, adjacent to the school, for the kids who rode the bus to come down the alley in safety and get on their bus and be taken to their neighborhoods as well. So one day, I remember we were all there, all the crossing guards were there, we were holding our poles, you know, next to each other as the kids were coming down the alley, you know, safely going to the bus. And I looked to the side, and here's one little boy, first or second grade, I'm not sure. He didn't like going down the alley. He was just running full bore down the hill. I don't know if he was just trying to get there first or whether he was late or I don't know what it was. But anyway, that wasn't what they were supposed to do. So as he came near me, I grabbed him and I started to chastise him. But I say, "What are you doing? You're supposed to be down here in this line. You're supposed to come right down here." And so I'm looking at him like this, and he's looking up at me like me. And he just goes, wham, and hit me right in the jaw. Now, you know, he was little, and so it really didn't hurt, but it just stunned me that this little boy would defy authority at that age. And, you know, what we're seeing in our culture today is a great deal of disrespect for authority, and as a result, the defying of authority. And sadly enough, that begins in the home. For the last several weeks, I've been sharing with you some material from an article written by Glenn Pemberton, who is a professor at Abilene Christian University. It's titled, "It's a Fool's Life, Deformation of Character in Proverbs." And if you're interested, I have it on a PDF on my computer. If you would like a copy of the article, just let me know and I could forward it to you. But Dr. Pemberton breaks the deformation of character down into four stages. And he admits that there can be other stages, that he's just chosen four. Stage one, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, is periodic foolish behavior. Because folly is bound up in the heart of a child, as we read that in Proverbs. And it's at this stage that discipline is critical. Because if that folly is not driven out of the child, the child's character will begin to deform even further into what he calls stage two, folly becomes sport. And we talked about that last week. So in other words, the child actually desires foolishness. It becomes fun or a game to them. And so if discipline is not applied appropriately in stage two, it will result in the character of the child deforming into stage three. And Pemberton has described stage three as beyond correction. When a child's character deforms to this stage, hope diminishes significantly for bringing about change. And at this stage, even if that child were given the opportunity to obtain wisdom, he or she would not take advantage of it because at this point, they despise it. Proverbs 1:7, fools despise wisdom and instruction. So at this stage, they even hate the idea of knowledge. Proverbs 1:22, how long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? Now, if you recall, in stage one, the child is at least willing to listen to correction and usually respond to it, hopefully. I mean, they're still teachable, but by the time they reach stage three, they won't even listen to correction. Proverbs 10:8 says, the wise of heart will receive commandments, but a babbling fool will come to ruin. So a fool will not even receive a commandment. They won't even listen to instruction at this point. And not only will they not listen, but any attempt to correct or discipline at this point will be hated, despised. Proverbs 23, verse 9, do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the good sense of your words. So even to attempt discipline at this point is considered foolish. Proverbs 16, verse 22, good sense is a fountain of life to him who has it, but the instruction of fools is folly. Now, Pemberton suggests two reasons why fools aren't willing to accept wisdom, even if the opportunity presents itself to them. Reason number one is documented in Proverbs 12:15. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. So the first reason that the fool is not willing to accept correction is that now the fool believes that his way is the right way. You know, he's reached a point where he now trusts only in himself and in his thinking. Proverbs 28:26, whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool. So you really can't tell a person who has regressed to this stage anything. He or she only trusts in his own thinking, believing that he is wiser than those who attempt to correct him. And since he's not going to listen, you're not going to win the argument. You won't be able to reason with them because in their mind they are right and you're wrong. Reason number two why fools aren't willing to accept wisdom or correction, even if the opportunity presents itself, is according to Pemberton, is because they are looking for the easy way out. Now, you know, you might be thinking like I do, well, what's wrong with that? I mean, we all seek easier ways to accomplish whatever it is we're trying to do, right? I mean, why do something the hard way if you don't really have to? I don't like doing anything the hard way any more than anybody else, but that's really not what this is about. It's not about doing it the hard way. It's about doing it the right way. In Proverbs 1, the parents of the youth, as Max read for us a moment ago, urge him to listen to their instruction and to avoid the enticement of sinners. My son, if sinful men entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, come along with us, let's lie in wait for innocent blood. Let's ambush some harmless soul. Let's swallow them alive like the grave and whole like those who go down to the pit. We'll get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder. Cast lots with us. We'll share all the loot. Verse 15, my son, do not go along with them. So the thinking of the fool is rather than working and saving their money to obtain what they want, they prefer to steal it from others. You know, that's quicker and easier, and they won't have to work for it. And apparently there are quite a few fools in Westerville, because there have been quite a few car break-ins, if you read the news and the neighbor news and so forth, in the Westerville area. A lot of people have been getting their windows shattered in Westerville. And so this is what the police instructed us to do. If you don't have a garage, then since you have to leave your car outside at night, take all the valuables out of your car and leave the car unlocked so that your windows are not broken. I'm thankful I have a garage. Verse 14 reflects the gang mentality in Proverbs 1. You'll have lots of friends. We'll share everything. Preying on others to get what you want. Easy money, instant gratification, and camaraderie. The pitfall is that they don't realize the consequences of their actions. Because Proverbs 1:18 says they set an ambush for their own lives. How sad. They can't see that they're going to ruin their own lives. You know, and so once a person travels down this road and the character begins to deform, it really becomes difficult to change. The reason is due to the effort it takes to obtain wisdom. You know, godly wisdom is not acquired by accident, although wisdom can be acquired from experience. Just that happened to me quite a number of times by accidentally acquired by wisdom can be acquired. In fact, one I learned the hard way about sending emails when you're angry. Anybody ever had that problem? I learned, it took me a couple times to learn this, unfortunately, that when you're angry, you don't send emails, you don't tweet, you don't text, you don't do any of that. You give it time, you cool down, and think about it. As if you don't, you'll regret it. Godly wisdom typically does not come easy. It takes effort. In Proverbs chapter 2, the first five verses make that point. It says, my son, if you accept my words and you store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, indeed, if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you'll understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. So godly wisdom doesn't just fall down into your lap. You have to work for it. You have to search for it. It's like mining for gold or silver, according to this author. And of course, the gang mentality is just to take the path of least resistance. It's just the direct opposite. The gang mentality says, we don't want to work hard. We don't want to wait for our reward. We want it the quickest and easiest way we can get it, and we want it now, and we can get it now. And that's foolish thinking. And that's one reason why you need to choose your friends wisely, and you need to be aware of the friends your children choose. And at this stage, the fool actually becomes a menace to society. And the only possible opportunity for correction is then corporate punishment. And even that may be a little too late. Proverbs 17:10 says, a rebuke goes deeper into a man of understanding than 100 blows into a fool. And Pemberton wrote, you know, maybe the 101st blow will make a difference, but it's unlikely at this point. You know, there are some success stories. I mean, there are some stories of change and rehabilitation, but they are very, very rare. Statistics show that half of all criminals released from a period of incarceration become repeat offenders. And the statistics are even worse for criminals who committed the crime prior to age 21. According to a 2016 U.S. Bureau Sentencing Commission study, the recidivism rate of federal offenders released back into the community prior to age 21 was 67.6%. So in other words, when a person has committed a federal crime under age 21, maybe any crime, whether it's federal or local, serves time and is released, two-thirds of them end up back in prison again. And as I said, if you consider all age groups, it's half end up back in prison. And the reason those rates are so high probably has something to do with the deformation of character in these persons. You know, their character is deforming into a fool. And they're unwilling to listen to anyone else because they believe their way is the right way. And without some form of intervention, they return to what they know. And that's the gang mentality of easy money, instant gratification, and camaraderie. I mean, you have to admire people who are involved in prison ministry. Because from what we learn from these statistics, there just isn't going to be a lot of fruit produced from it. For the fruit to be produced, there has to be a change in character. And that doesn't come very easily, especially when you've deformed, your character's deformed to this point. You know, if we could just convince society that the only hope for change really is the power of the gospel and Jesus Christ, we might see better results. George Bernard Shaw, who was an Irish dramatist and critic, won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1925. And here's what he said. Perhaps the greatest social service that can be rendered by anybody to the country and to mankind is to bring up a family. You know, one of the reasons that adultery was punished so severely, stoning to death, in Jewish society was not just because it was a matter of sin and unfaithfulness or disobedience, but also because it was a threat to society. It destroyed the marriage relationship, creating economic instability in their little societies, their little cultures. You see that problem in our country today. A lot of single moms trying to raise their kids on one income or having to work two jobs, and a lot of them, the majority of them, are at the poverty level. And all these divorced fathers who not only have to support, if they remarry, support their current family, but also, you know, have to support their past family. You know, as has been mentioned previously, wisdom begins with the fear of God. Proverbs 1:7. That's what a fool lacks. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. Proverbs 14:1. So if you don't believe in God, it makes sense. If you don't believe in God or you don't care, then you're not going to have any fear or respect for God. And without the fear of God, you lose the motivating factor of attaining that godly wisdom, that moral wisdom, because that is the source of wisdom according to Proverbs 1:7. And so just to reiterate again, that is why it's so crucial to teach your children about God and His will. Teach them to love God. Show them how to love God by the way you love God. Teach them about God. Place them on the right path from the very beginning. As I mentioned at the beginning about the communication card, there are three steps on the back of that card I hope you'll take. Memorize Proverbs 14:1. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. Read Proverbs 2:1-5 about what it takes to obtain wisdom. And take the correction challenge. Correct the attitudes and behaviors, if you need to, in your life. Examine your life and make the corrections necessary, and especially also in your child's life before they go down the wrong path. Proverbs warns you that when a person's character has deformed into a fool, not only have they brought great harm to themselves and those around them, but you risk harming yourself if you associate with a fool. Proverbs 13:20, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools suffers harm. You remember Paul's advice to the Thessalonians. Many of the Thessalonians were idle. And he said, don't hang around with them. Don't go near them. Because he didn't want that behavior to infect the other Christians. in the Thessalonian church. So if you have a child or grandchild that has regressed to this stage, let me just give you one little bit of encouragement. Not all is lost. You know, as long as there is God, there is hope. Jeffrey Dahmer, a lot of us heard about him years ago, about the serial killer who cannibalized a lot of his victims. You know, it's my understanding that he put his faith in Christ. He was baptized into Christ before he was executed. So if that's true, and if a man can make a change at that point, there is some ray of hope for everyone. So as I mentioned, 14:1, Proverbs 4, the fool says in his heart there is no God. All the fools who have ever lived will find camaraderie someday. And it will be the largest gang of fools ever assembled in one place. And that will be hell. Some people say, well, I don't believe in hell. Well, that's okay, but disbelief has nothing to do with whether something is true. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. I pray you will believe in God today. Obey the gospel today. Don't end up in the gang of fools that are going to be in hell forever. Don't do that. No, you don't want to go there. You want to be with God. You want to be in a place of paradise. So this morning, if you have not yet put on Christ, I urge you to do it this morning. If you're heading down the wrong path in your life, if you need to make some changes, I suggest we pray today. Invoke the power of God in your life today. We'll pray together about it. Whatever. This is a time to respond. We encourage you to do that right now as we stand and as we sing.